morning on 2FM.
2FM. Now, in the midst of Brexit, everything seems unusual and new. However, last week, the Queen's speech in Westminster in Parliament brought forward some of the more bizarre pageantry of British democracy. Well, luckily, Graham Findlay, lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations in University College Dublin, is here to explain some of the more, I don't know, wacky and traditional rituals. Graham, welcome to the programme one more time. Let's start easy, if you like. The origins of Parliament. They go back to the 13th century, the 1200s. So there are traditions everywhere. The seating, the colours of the House of Commons, the most obvious, I think.
And they're quite ancient. And in many ways, when you look at a parliamentary ceremony, you see so many different eras of history sort of piled up on top of each other. So some of the traditions date from the 17th century, when the parliament finally, by chopping the head off the king, asserted its supremacy over the sovereign. Although officially the queen in parliament is sovereign in the United Kingdom, which is something which has been lost on a lot of the Brexiteers who are talking about how the referendum and popular sovereignty is sovereign. But anyway, so you've got the 17th century sort of assertion of parliamentary power, but then you also have the modern form of the ritual, which is actually pretty recent, which is from the 19th century. And when they started in 1852 with the modern form of the ceremony of, say, the state opening of Parliament, which was what we saw the other day with all the wacky costumes and stuff like that, political parties, which made prime ministers possible, were relatively recent inventions. And so in many ways, what we're looking at is an invented tradition, which nevertheless incorporates some very, very old traditions.
And what about like the conventional things of ministers sitting on the front bench to the right hand of the speaker, and the chief whip is the next to the gangway and all this?
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
It is a remarkable sort of thing. So there actually aren't enough spaces in the parliament necessarily for all of the MPs. And so there is a provision for them to sit elsewhere. But what's really striking is that while it's customary, again, to have the government on the right and for the first minister, the chief ministers to occupy the front bench, which is why we call them the front bench, people can sit wherever they want. And so if you were the Green Party's sole MP, you could go and sit right where the prime minister normally sits and they can't kick you out.
Really?
Because it's all customary and it's all, you know, sort of it's an option. There's so many strange things about it. So one thing which they have, as we do here, is opening the parliamentary sessions with a prayer. And it's always a Christian prayer. And that's highly specific. In Westminster, what's really striking is the dole has gotten rid of a lot of these things. But in Westminster, if you're there for the prayer, you can get a prayer card. But you have to be there in person. And it's sort of stamped with that date. You can then place that card where you want to sit in the Commons. And that's reserved for you. And that is the only way you can reserve a seat in the House
of Commons. For the rest of the time while you're there?
For the rest of the day, right.
Over
you have
day.
To do it every day if you want a designated seat.
I thought you did it on the 1st of September and
later.
You're fine for 12 months at least.
No. It's just by the day. So you got to go to the prayers if you want a seat. And again, you know, nobody's going to really enforce this. And yet, there is a lot of enforcement in the House of Commons. And yet this is something that the Commons has agreed to abide by.
Okay, colours. I did mention colours.
Yeah.
Are they important?
They are. Now, the House of Lords, which again, for much of Parliament's history, would have been where the action is, right? It's hard for us to imagine that now. But that was, the original parliaments were lords, a whole bunch of lords getting together to sort things out. And again, the judges of the land would have attended those parliaments of lords. And that's why the judges still attend the Queen's speech and the opening of Parliament. But they would have been there in the Middle Ages to give their legal opinion on matters of law. So the House of Lords was closest to the King or the Queen. It was, initially the monarchs, when they had almost absolute power, or had certainly highly unconstrained power, you know, would have had their courts, and their courts would have been colored red.
Yeah.
Red is associated with the monarchy. So the colors in the House of Lords are red, and the color in the House of Commons is green. You'll see the green benches if you look at Parliament. That's been the case since at least the 17th century. We know that the color of the House of Commons has been green for at least that long.
Okay, colours is one thing. Let's have a look. I did mention weird ones. Let's start with the Speaker, John Bercow. He's become the face of order.
Yeah.
But are there any odd traditions surrounding his place in the House?
And again, you know, this is a really ancient part of the House, which is that you know, the Speaker of the House is the highest ranking commoner in the land. Everyone thinks it's the Prime Minister, but in fact, it's the Speaker of the House of Commons. And the role of Speaker of the House of Commons goes very, very far back, before there were political parties and prime ministers of any kind, you know, before the king could appoint their ministers and they didn't have to select from whoever had the confidence.
Is this guy dragged in kicking and screaming, or like there's some kind of a...
Well, this is the reason. So there's a ritual, and people vie quite hard to become Speaker of the House of Commons. But there is this ritual that he or she is dragged to the podium because traditionally, again, the Speaker of the House of Commons represented the Commons and would go to the king to declare what the Commons' will was. And the kings in the past have often not liked that. And so they've imprisoned or executed past speakers. And so, you know, there's a sort of understandable reluctance. And again, this is back before the Commons had the sovereign power it has now. And so... You know, it's a sort of tradition from a very, very ancient part. And the whole House of Commons is arranged in a way to preserve order and to have it function. And the Speaker is in charge of making sure that members of Parliament obey these orders. And there are all sorts of conventions about how you're supposed to behave, and the Speaker can enforce that. In the House of Commons, they can enforce it by using the sergeants at arms, which are also a very, very ancient part of the Parliament. Now, the sergeants at arms have been appointed by the sovereign. They start off as a personal bodyguard of the sovereign, and their power is represented by the mace, which they carry. Mm. For a long time, they used to carry it with the sort of business end of the mace up, the phalanged head, which you use to bash people's heads in. But as the heraldry of the king got more and more elaborate, which was at the butt end of the mace, they invented it, turning it over, because there was so much more action at the heraldry end of the mace that's what they really wanted to put on display. And so when that's in Parliament, it shows that the regal authority is in place, and the Queen is in Parliament, and the Parliament is in proper session.
Okay, now this sounds like a very personal question, but let's talk about the judge's woolsack.
Yes, it does. It does. I mean, so there's the woolsack, which is a cushion, which is in front of the thrones of the House of Lords. Generally, lords can sit on there, you know, in normal sessions of the House of Lords. But during the Queen's speech, the judges of the British Supreme Court traipse in their wigs, which are also fairly ancient, and sit on the woolsack as they used to during parliaments in the Middle Ages. So, yes, but the woolsack is a big pillow in front of the thrones in the Lords. And then the judge's woolsack is an even bigger pillow.
OK, it's got an even bigger woolsack.
It's very, very comfy.
OK, what about things that you cannot do in Parliament?
Yeah, so... Parliament, again, has these strange rules, and they're enforced by the Speaker, and I think in a pinch by the Sergeant at Arms. But you can't wear armor, which actually makes a certain amount of sense. The parliaments, and you know, there are plenty of parliaments around the world where fisticuffs still break out, but the parliamentary benches are famously two sword lengths apart. Right. So you can't speak from the middle part where you could stab someone with your sword if in the parliament. And so you can only speak from the benches, but you're not allowed to wear armor. You actually have to wear business dress.
And you have to speak English, do you?
And you have to speak in English. Welsh is allowed under very constrained circumstances.
What about when
mostly
there's
the Welsh
PM? Like, you know,
was. David Lloyd George seems to be a native Welsh speaker, and he was prevented from speaking in Welsh. You can speak about Welsh matters in committee, on the Welsh committee in Welsh, but otherwise you have to speak in English. Members get up and they sort of half rise to catch the speaker's eye. Members can't refer to each other by their proper names.
You have to, I presume, be capable of what I would call debating. Can you use notes?
This is something which I actually did not know, and I'm really glad to find out. You cannot read a speech in the House of Commons. Now, if you've watched the House of Commons, you might be surprised by this. But, you know, while you can have extensive notes, you cannot read a speech. Another interesting feature about the House of Commons is the sort of barracking which goes on. I mean, the people were talking about I was just at a paper talking about voice pitch and politicians' speeches, where they're measuring how people's pitch ranges and what happens to their voice, and as a measure of how emotional they get during parliamentary debates or in committee meetings and things like that. And the British House of Commons is a real problem for those researchers because there's so much background noise.
Yeah.
So that is also very traditional. Again, all of these traditions have sort of grown up through use, and they're very attached to them.
Can I just ask, like, would members of the opposition be there going, okay, I know what he's going to say at about 20 past three because he's going to go and blah, 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 blah. I want us all to roar laughing at that moment.
I think it's not as coordinated as that. As far as I know...
You gang up in other words?
You can. Well, I mean, at some point, if the House becomes so unruly, the Speaker can quiet it down and yell order, as we've noticed.
And by the way, if he does yell
past,
order, and if one is talking to another, or one side talking to another, there's none of this like, hey, James, shut up, or Jimmy, you know, whatever. It's all honourable member.
Oh, the honourable member. You cannot refer to people by their names. And so you have to refer to the honourable member. You have to do it through the Speaker. And actually, you see this in parliamentary debating societies in Ireland today. What I was really struck by is, now, the Cian Camara of the Dáil can do... I'm always fudging the Irish. didn't grow up here, people.
That's completely allowed.
But anyway.
By the way, we are talking to Graham Finlay, lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations, University College Dublin, about weird parliamentary rituals, 51552. Where are you from again, Maine?
I'm from Canada originally.
Canada, that's
So, and in fact, Canada has a really interesting history in this regard. I was a page in the House of Commons in Canada, so I got to see these rituals firsthand.
What's a page? One of these?
As a page are the people who get you water if you're a member of parliament.
Oh, really?
You know, you run around delivering messages and stuff like that. Right. Yeah. It was a great political program where super politically interested students were admitted, and we got lots of access to the parliament. But we served our time delivering messages for the MPs.
So you must have got really kind of in with all the kind of rituals and the madness.
Yeah, I got to see, and we don't have quite as many in Canada, but we do have sergeants of arms who can, you know, keep order if, for example, a member of parliament, as recently happened during Brexit debates, grabs the mace, which sort of keeps, you know, take, if someone grabs the mace and runs off with it, which is what he did, right? You know, Parliament is not sitting in regular session anymore, right? And the Speaker can try to store order by getting, as happened, the sergeants to grab the mace and put it back.
Hasn't that happened in England where they hit it?
That was in England,
where they threw it out the window.
In Australia, a member of Parliament hit it and they couldn't find it for 3 days, and a criminal investigation was launched.
Was it?
The Bahamas, he just put it under a bench. They're not very good at finding maces.
Like, how big is it?
Big old thing. These things are five feet long. In the Bahamas, they threw it out the window.
it got all broken.
And in fact, they had to borrow a Canadian mace, which was a wooden mace, because when the parliament buildings burned down, they lost our regular mace. And a lot of these maces are actually given to the colonies by bodies in England, right?
And you cannot move forward, you cannot debate if the mace isn't there.
Yeah, it's all higgledy-piggledy at that point.
Well, when I mentioned the Queen the other day and making her speech, that was done from the House of Lords, wasn't it?
It is.
Because monarchy hasn't been there for 1,000 years or
And that is the most unbelievably ritualistic thing. And that's what's really, I think, sparked people's interest in these rituals.
As in, monarchy is not allowed?
The monarch is not allowed in the House of Commons. The last monarch to enter the House of Commons was Charles I in 1642. And he stormed in and he wanted to arrest five leading parliamentarians who were resisting his desire to tax the place to pay for his wars.
Maybe he could go as a tourist, sneak in disguise.
It would be very awkward if she did. So what happens is this whole ceremony, which is completely bonkers, you might have seen the heralds, who are the guys who are dressed like playing cards. They now go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
The yeomen of the guard, who are dressed like beefeaters, but they're actually separate from the ones in the Tower of London, search the cellars in advance in costume to make sure that Guy Fawkes hasn't shown up again to blow up the parliament, as he threatened to do or tried to do in the 17th century.
And he'll do that in about
The Queen
two
rides
time.
Up in a carriage. She then goes to the robing room, where she has to put on an 18-foot ermine red stole robe, right? She's accompanied by the imperial crown, the cap of maintenance, and lots of other bizarre accoutrements.
Sorry,
like
the imperial
sword
crown is a person.
It's a huge crown.
I'm confused here.
And she doesn't wear it because it's too heavy. Your neck would break if you...
Did you see she left it on the seat the other day?
Yeah, she has
And she wore a skinny little one that she got out of the looking
bag. Well, she's 93, to be fair. But she's reading the speech, and she's actually said, if you had the imperial crown on and you went over to read the speech, you'd break your neck.
Do you think in some ways, did you see her reading the speech?
It sounded as though,
do I have to read this nonsense?
It was sort of like a hostage video.
Yeah, exactly.
but
you can see the newspaper, date behind her.
But you know, just in case people don't get the importance of Parliament's control over the Queen and its independence, they actually post, you know, so Charles I had his head cut off for that, among other things. They post Charles I's death certificate in the room in which she puts on the giant robe.
As a warning,
as a sort of, don't go to the Parliament today,
watch
you know,
lady.
And so And then we saw Black Rod, who's the lady usher of the Black Rod. A lot of these people have weird sticks they
carry.
Sorry,
the lady usher of the Black Rod.
Right, which is a traditional usher's sort of material.
It's the sixth part of Game of Thrones.
I know. A lot of these things are weapons. Things are weapons, right? Which people use to beat people with. But anyway, she shows up at the door of the parliament, and it's slammed in her face, and she has to knock three times.
Oh yeah.
Where she comes in, and she requests them all to come to the House of Lords.
Sorry,
and
when I said, oh, yeah, I wasn't saying, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, oh, yeah.
That's bonkers.
It's bonkers.
It is bonkers.
Exactly.
But the Parliament takes its independence very seriously. So then all of the members of Parliament, led by the Speaker, saunter. They can't just process. They have to saunter. That's a custom.
As opposed to man, Burko, being dragged.
Yeah, exactly. Now they saunter. If they were walking unsaunterly, they'd be in breach of custom. To the bar of the House of Lords, and they can't pass the bar. They,
Which bar is this?
So there's a bar at the
drinking bar.
It's like a little actual bar, laid across the entrance to the House of Lords. All of the MPs have to sort of watch from behind the bar. It is crazy. And yet they seem to like it.
That's unbelievable. Okay, now let's take a look at this here. Taking photographs, applauding, all the rest
of it? Nope, none of that's allowed. No. And of course, with phones, that's increasingly difficult. Yeah, you have to wear business-like dress, and the penalties are much more severe there than they would be in the Dáil, right? I mean, we have certain people whose notion of business dress in the Dáil has been criticized.
It's a pink shirt and long hair.
For example, right? Long hair, that can be very nice. Yeah, they want people to dress respectively, and the censoring is much more severe.
Well, hold on. I want to look at censoring of language here. Yeah. Unparliamentary language, what can you and can you not say?
So most swear words are out, but there's this huge long litany of things which people have called their fellow members of parliament, which has been ruled out of order, and you have to apologize for it, or else you will be asked to leave the parliament for a period of time. Blackguard, coward, git, gutter snipe, hooligan, slimy, sod, stool pigeon, tart, traitor, wart, etc., etc., pipsqueak. And also you can't accuse people of lying. You can accuse people of being sort of economical with the truth, right? But you can't accuse people
of lying. Or as Ina Blyton would say, he's telling an untruth.
Yeah, you might get away with that. but they often go to much, much greater lengths. You can't accuse your fellow members of being drunk, whereas if we know anything about bars and parliaments, that's a very likely outcome. And it has happened in the past, but you can't say it.
All right. Well, listen, Graham, it's fascinating stuff. All right, in the middle of all of this, we're talking Brexit shenanigans today, all day long as well, which I presume you'll be watching after the match or during the match.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, there's two matches on today, but fortunately they don't clash.
Okay. Graham, listen, thank you so much for talking to us on the program today. That is Graham Findlay, as usual, a lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations in University College Dublin. 51552 is our text.
Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2 FM.